Hello, welcome to Thinking Like a Lawyer.
Hi, that was great. Thank you for taking on introductory duties. This is Thinking Like a Lawyer, as Chris just said. I'm Joe Patrice. That's Chris Williams. We're also joined by Catherine Rubino somewhere in here.
I'm here.
Yay. And this is your weekly dose of above the law content on the radios.
On the podcast.
For your ears.
That's weird.
Yeah, well, okay.
Okay, we'll workshop that one.
Sure.
Let's keep rolling.
Yes, so this is the podcast where we talk about the week's big stories in the legal universe, but first...
Too bad nothing much happened, really. It's going to be a pretty dry week, I imagine.
Yeah, nothing's happening at all. Uh-oh.
Well, oh, nothing unexpected.
Yeah, first, we do have to have our small talk. It is holiday week, so... Maybe some of you aren't even listening to this when it drops. You might be hitting it sometime over the weekend. But if you are, you know, happy holidays.
Yeah, do some BBQing.
So, yeah, you've got plans?
Yeah, I'm going to be grilling. It's still weird for me to say grilling as opposed to barbecuing because I am now at the age where I recognize that when people say barbecue, they mean, you know, slow cooking and smoking food. But I grew up calling grilling barbecuing. So it still feels like I'm going to want to say barbecuing, but grilling actually food, which, you know, should be fun.
Yeah.
We'll see. I am not a fireworks enthusiast personally.
Okay.
Like, I like them when real professionals do them. Like, when Disney does their, you know, nightly fireworks spectacular, I would like a front row seat if at all possible. But when Joe Schmo and his 15 beers of Coke, you know,
is on a train platform and sets them off.
Well, there you go. That's also true. But, you know, I dislike that it is also a day where a lot of people lose fingers and et cetera. It's not great. It makes me really anxious and apprehensive. So I will not be partaking in that tradition.
Yeah. Well, with the Paul's Graph shout out aside, how about you, Chris? You got anything going on with your days off here?
Oh, you know, I'm still processing that we're going to have a monarchy under July 4th.
Well, that is...
Now who's not keeping to the structures of small talking?
Yeah.
Hey, I'm talking about living under it. I didn't talk about why yet.
I get all kinds of bad flack for that. And now here we are.
Listen,
and now you see how bad it is when you're not the one doing it. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
See, I don't mind if it's
legal-ish. And also, mine wasn't that bad.
Yeah, I don't mind if it's legal-ish, but when it's one of the topics we're about to get to, I guess we should probably wait until we get there, but yes.
Well, I never said
minor
why.
Minor spoiler.
Let me have my fun. But yeah, fun thing I learned recently, I learned the history of the word podcast, which I thought was super interesting. So are y'all familiar? You know where the word podcast comes from?
Is it just because they were on iPods?
Partially. That is a major credit.
That is the pod part.
I thought it was the pod part.
And the thing is, like most Gen Alpha wouldn't get that because they wouldn't be part of, like, the iUniverse.
Right, they wouldn't know what an iPod is. Yeah.
Right. So there's,
I know.
So
nieces are Gen Alpha. They got iPods a couple years ago for Christmas.
Oh, because
they're iPod touches.
So you can listen to music but not have a phone kind of a thing.
Right, as kind of a precursor to them eventually getting phones despite being in middle school.
Fair.
Yeah.
Well, you gave them old tech, so like up to date ones.
No, they were new. They still sell them, or they did then a few years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, I never would have thought of it. Yeah.
So interesting on two parts. So it's a portmanteau of iPod and broadcast, but broadcast is it used to be a farming technique where you would have like a broadcast of seeds. So you have like the iPod and broadcast. So you have like peas in a pod and then broadcasting. So you could do some like fun history playing with words where it's both like kind of like vegetable or like plant related terms. And now that's, you know, people podcasting.
There you go. Well, let's eat your veggies, folks. And
we will get back to that specific analogy in a bit. But for now, I guess we should turn to the already previewed opinion section. There's not really much to talk about other than various Supreme Court things this week. So
what do you mean? Nothing much other than major changes to our fundamental government.
Yes.
Yeah.
Other than that,
that's a pretty good summary, actually.
As of this recording, we're only about an hour or so removed from learning that presidents have functional absolute immunity for all criminal behavior. So that was exciting.
It was something, I'll tell you that. Yeah.
So the opinion is an interesting, it's interesting in its, like, clumsiness, I feel. This is sort of situation, obviously, the conservatives on the Supreme Court were trying to delay all the prosecutions of Trump. And there are some legitimate questions one might have about whether or not certain of his actions were, you know, did he really do an illegal thing when he gave a speech and whatever? And those kind of questions, which are all the subject of the DC case, are fascinating and completely irrelevant to this discussion. Mm-hmm. But nonetheless, the Supreme Court decided to weigh in and say that the DC Circuit's incredibly thorough and detailed opinion was not enough for them. And they remanded the case for further evaluation to determine, basically, presidents have, in their eyes, some form of immunity for the core constitutional duties that they have. Basically, you can't pass a law saying it's illegal for them to be the commander in chief or anything like that, mm-hmm. which makes sense. What is not covered in this opinion, in the majority's reasoning, is the argument of the Trump's lawyers that came up at the DC Circuit, which is, well, what if the president were to use SEAL Team 6 to assassinate a political rival and claimed it was essential to national security, what would you do then? And their answer was, I guess that would be legal. The Supreme Court's response to that was,
well, probably.
Yeah, anyway, we can do whatever he wants for national security, which somewhat glosses over this problem.
Yeah, I think you're right that it's very clumsy. I mean, if you still haven't read them, I would start with the dissents and work backwards.
I think that's right.
Yeah, to sort of give you a better framing of what's going on. You kind of, Joe, I know, have pointed out that one of the most sort of egregious parts is actually not one of the parts that Amy Coney Barrett signed on to, which is the evidence.
Yeah, so this opinion will go down in history reading as a 6-3 opinion, but it really was 6-3 on a lot of questions, but one of the more important issues, it was actually 5-4, because Justice Barrett actually did set out one of the key arguments, which is, and an argument that I actually think might be the most important, because the idea that there's some official acts that you can't criminally prosecute over versus unofficial ones is glib for all of the reasons we just talked about, that you can find excuses, whatever. But while glib, it is a generally defensible thing in a broad 10,000-foot level. What is not, however, is the 5-justice majority also went so far as to say that if the president were to do some unofficial criminal act, the prosecutors would not be allowed to use any evidence that is connected with the president's formal duties. Meaning, if you, for instance, assassinated somebody, maybe that's not legal, but all your communications with the Department of Defense about doing that would not be able to come before a jury.
Yeah, it's
that
weird.
Makes it real good luck proving that.
Yeah, then. But it also, it's weird that they've grafted in rules of evidence into an immunity conversation, which no one asked.
Right. There's no text for any of this shit, right? Like, there's zero text for it.
This is whole cloth. How can we make sure that even if what Donald Trump did was not an official part of his duties, he still can't get prosecuted?
Right.
That's all this is.
Because, and so how that works within the context of this, of the DC case, is actually pretty on point, because one of the defenses that Trump makes is that, no, when I was calling people and saying, you know, you've got to overturn
this. Find me X number of votes.
When I was calling people and saying you need to overturn the election, I was really interested in voter fraud, and I was communicating with the Department of Justice about that. the argument would be under this new opinion would be, okay, so maybe that's illegal, but you don't get to have the jury see any of the conversations in which he was telling the attorney general any of this stuff. Mm-hmm. And to that extent, you can't really prove a crime, and that extends that immunity. It is wild. Roberts, in his opinion on this point, says, well, we need to do that or else it would swallow the rule. Barrett, in her concurrence, is like, that's absolutely bonkers. There's no way that, in fact, it's the opposite. It swallows any hope of there being a limit to immunity if you don't allow that. She actually uses the example, imagine a bribery case. Bribery is illegal, but if you couldn't bring in any communications that you had about the official act the bribery was inducing, then it would prevent you from doing any of that. Now, she forgets that the Supreme Court already has legalized bribery as of last week, but that's another thing altogether.
Well, to that point, we don't know when the opinions were written, so this might have been written before that, and they were like, well, let's put the bribery out there to temper them, and then this dropped. So,
well, you know, it's interesting. We're going to talk about that in a later segment, the whole issue of when they're written and how much the justices know about what's coming, because that's going to come in when we have a conversation about another case. But yeah, so it's interesting. The dissent is very originalist, you know, liberals yet again being better at the made up philosophy that conservatives claim to live by.
Yeah, and well, you know, just further evidence that it was never a real judicial philosophy and instead, you know, a veil that they put over their political leanings, which, yeah, you know, people have been paying attention have known for quite some time. But it's almost like sad to read. And I don't mean it just because now we have kings, but like also to watch Sotomayor play the game as if doing a better originalist job should convince originalists when it has already been laid bare that they're political actors, not originalists.
Yes. Yeah. And Kagan does this all the time too, with both textualism and originalism both. Mm-hmm. She will write dissents where they lock in on shame. Like, this is what you say you believe in. And the issue is that only really functions if any of them
have shame.
Exhibit shame.
Yeah.
Which
yeah.
it seems as though Barrett might.
May
not have had that muscle fully removed, but everybody else seems to have.
As the most recent Republican put on the court, she still has some shame.
Yeah, it's an interesting history lesson, though, going, hey, did you notice that there's no immunity text in the Constitution? There's a reason for that. And rolling through everything of it. Roberts dismisses it by saying, this is just kind of cherry picking, which is
LOL.
Absolutely mind blowing as a statement from somebody who rules
who
on historical vibes all the time. Yeah. Anyway.
Here we are. American democracy. We barely knew ye.
I mean, yeah.
The wild thing is, and this is one of those things where like where you know the empire is scripted. There was a point where Trump was running. Before he was elected, he was like, I could go shoot somebody in the head and I wouldn't get in trouble for it. He was right.
Yeah. No, yeah.
He can shoot
somebody on Fifth Avenue. As long as he's president at the time and writes a letter to the attorney general telling him he's doing it. We, of course, have to remember those parts or else it would just be crazy.
Well, no, I was going to say, which I think is the bullshit, as long as it's an official act opposed to an unofficial one, which is not clear.
And especially with that evidence caveat, the line between official and unofficial becomes a distinction without any real difference at that point. It just wild times. So the takeaway from that is that at least
become president, you can do whatever you want.
At least the DC prosecution is probably doomed. Yeah. The classified documents, which is a much more damning one, that actually could be interesting because, of course, if he did have any official power over those documents, it ended when he ceased to be president. So it's hard to say that immunity should extend to that, but I'm sure they will try.
Well, they don't even have to get to it because Eileen Cannon's in charge. So.
Right. McDermott, Will & Emery is Vault's number one law firm for associate satisfaction 3 years running. Why? Because they're doing big law better. McDermott is about achieving excellence together. Their culture is collaborative and inclusive. McDermott is a place where you can build your dream legal career. Their focus on mentorship, training, and wellness supports you throughout your journey. In 2023, 73% of associates earned at or above Cravath's bonus scale, and 65% of those associates earned above the Cravath scale in 2023. All with a lower hour threshold. Want to see how your life could be better at McDermott? Head to careers.mwe.com/above the law.
Hey, Gee, what's up?
Just having some lunch, Conrad.
Hey, Gee, do you see that billboard out there?
Oh, you mean that guy out there in the gray suit?
Yeah, the gray suit guy.
Order up. There's all those beautiful, rich, leather-bound books in the background.
That is exactly the one. That's J.D. McGuffin at Law. He'll fight for you!
I bet you he has got so many years of experience.
Like decades and decades. And I bet, Gee, I bet he even went to a law school.
Are you a lawyer? Do you suffer from dull marketing and a lack of positioning in a crowded legal marketplace? Sit down with Gee and Conrad for Lunch Hour Legal Marketing on the Legal Talk Network. Available wherever podcasts are found.
Okay, in addition to all of this with former presidents and
wait, there's more than fucked up Magna Carta?
There sure is. The administrative state, the series of institutions that have maintained general order and peace throughout the United States for years, those aren't really, they don't get to be things anymore.
Yeah, I mean, we talked earlier about grilling and barbecuing. This is probably the last holiday I'm going to have some hot dogs. Feel comfortable doing that.
Oh, no.
Yeah, the sorts of organizations like the FDA and stuff who do things like make sure that there's not much rat poison in your hot dogs.
It's only a little. Just a little seasoning amount of rat poisoning.
So historically, those organizations have been granted broad deference in how they interpret the implementation of laws. Congress passes a law that doesn't say a million and one possible pollutants, but instead says, hey, we should have an FDA and their scientists should figure out what kills people and then not let us eat it. It is intentionally written vague, not just because Congress doesn't care, but also they can't predict a million and one things coming in the future, but scientists generally can.
And they have the ability to write new rules as new substances get invented or circumstances change in some fundamental way.
Right. So for a long time, we've allowed, we've given some degree of deference to those folks. We do not anymore. John Roberts has overruled that and determined.
Well, I mean, Joe, I mean, the smartest among us are, in fact, lawyers. So,
yeah.
Where's the problem?
He specifically overrules it by saying that there is no, that scientists and agency people have no special skill to interpret statutes and judges do. This is absolutely insane, as Justice Kagan points out in dissent, because obviously this is not true. And it was proven true almost immediately because a decision that also happened last week had to be pulled quietly and re-edited because Gorsuch had written an opinion where he went off about laughing gas for a long period of time, not understanding it's different than nitrogen oxide, which is an actual pollutant. So we turned over scientific interpretation to the specially talented courts, and the court immediately had to turn around and point out that one of the justices didn't understand how gases work.
Yeah, which, isn't shocking, frankly, as Joe, you pointed out in your write-up of this. This is a lot of, lawyers are a lot of people who dropped out of med school or their medical plans because they failed Orgo, right?
Yeah, like, Orgo is a little too tough for you. So now you're here where you were told there would be no math.
There'd be no math. But unless you're a judge, in which case you get to do all of the sciencing for all of us. So, that's a thing.
I will say, this does open us up to a possible world where whatever judge, whatever president gets elected and decides to pack the court, puts Neil deGrasse Tyson on.
I mean, they've already said they don't want, they do everything based on history and then they don't want opinions from historians. So they just are kind of anti-expertise all the way down.
Oh, no. But imagine what textualism would look like on like a high level medical case where like the founding fathers thought that the blood actually consisted of, you know, humors.
You need to balance the humors.
Yeah.
A well applied leech.
Yeah. So
there was back in the day, a early Saturday Night Live seasons, there was a character that Steve Martin played who was like Theodoric of York, medieval barber. And it was him going around going like, well, medical science has progressed. Now we know, we used to say that your humors were out of balance, but now we know it is a small troll that has decided to move into your stomach. Anywho, yeah, no. So on social media, there was some back and forth. The conservative line on Chevron being overruled, which is the case we're talking about, has generally been, well, now this is good because we shouldn't have unelected bureaucrats making these sorts of decisions about legal text, because this isn't about the science. This is about the statutory text. Well, one, judges, not elected. So you just really, if that was your problem, you shifted.
You done screwed yourself.
and you did it worse, because you can vote out the administration who has the agencies you don't like. But also, the statutory text at issue, it's important to remember what that is, because yes, statutory interpretation is something lawyers are better at. But the words that we're talking about are, and I use in my write-up of this an example of what the world is going to look like now. When the mask mandate got struck down, mm-hmm. the way in which it happened was Judge Mizell, who was, you know, rated unqualified by the ABA and has managed to live up to that as in her run, she struck it down by arguing that the statutory text, which authorizes the CDC to stop disease by implementing measures up to and including sanitation measures, she said, well, masks can't be sanitation. Now, they're called sanitary masks, but she blows over that by saying, well, I interpret the word sanitation to mean removing trash. So they can make rules about removing trash, but nothing else. Now, this is not what the word sanitation means. It's not what a doctor would think it would mean, which would be sure. who you would think you would trust. But this
especially when you're talking about disease control.
Right. But this gets to the question of when people say, oh, it's just statutory interpretation. It's not the science. The statutory text that's at issue in all of these are the scientific statements.
Right.
These are the ones. And
right.
And another point, more so than the courts, the people who help Congress write these intentionally broad terms that Congress intends to be filled in by these agencies, maybe it's a bad thing about the revolving door that the world that we live in, but they're usually the people who end up running agencies, the lobbyists and so on who are involved in those discussions end up on the other side. And so they, more so than the judges by a lot, understand why certain text was chosen. So that's bad. But we can continue this discussion of the dismantling of the administrative state with today's conversation, which was that there used to be statutes of limitations. You couldn't say, if you thought that the rule was wrong, you had 6 years to say, hey, this rule is wrong. But that's not around anymore.
No, yeah. No. You can bring them whenever you think you've been harmed.
Right.
That's when the statute of limitations should actually begin to toll.
So essentially, if a rule was made in the 1960s banning certain chemicals, all you need is to have a new company use that chemical that didn't exist back then, but exists today, and they can mount that challenge. So rules are never actually settled, ever. Mm-hmm. They can always be brought up. And make no mistake, people are like, well, how do you... They don't get to just create willy-nilly new companies. Make no mistake, we had a Supreme Court opinion last year about a web design company that, as far as anyone knows, never designed any websites.
Right.
They are perfectly willing to invent new companies out of whole cloth to get to where they need to be. And that's where we have now. So now we not only have no deference, we now also have no statute of limitations.
I mean, I think one of the interesting things that's going to come from those two cases, as well as the SEC case saying that there needed to be no ALJs, you have to have jury trials for everything, is going to be a tremendous backlog of cases in the federal judiciary. I don't think we are truly prepared. I don't think conservatives have really thought through the amount of cases that are going to be filed, the amount of litigation that's going to be happened. I think somebody had said that, oh, this is a real boon for corporate litigators. Yeah. And that is a horrible statement, but is completely true. There's going to be so much more litigation and detailed, time-intensive, difficult to adjudicate litigation as a result of this trio of decisions.
But yeah, but this gets to that earlier conversation we were having about the meaning of words and broadcast and all that. Like this kind of semantic back and forth about how words came to be is now going to be dictating the quality of life for all of us at an almost, you know, on a whim.
Oh my and God, that's, there's going to be some statutory case and somebody on the Fifth Circuit is going to use a Bible definition for what counts as a weapon or something.
Already do.
Bajillion percent. Already true.
Yeah. But like,
Now I'll say also to the other thing that came up in small talk that I wanted to apply here, which was, when do they know they write these things? When the court struck down Chevron, they released that opinion before this one. And in that opinion, Roberts announces, basically, Chevron deference is always wrong and not the way the law should work, but all the ones that we've already applied it to, those don't get disturbed, which was a little, it made no sense, but it was a handout to maybe this won't be used to blow up everything in history. At that juncture, he knew that at the end of the weekend, they were going to release this opinion that reverses that claim. So he knew when he wrote that and tried to sound reasonable that he was going to do the opposite. He was going to sign on to an opinion doing the opposite.
He was writing something so some future jurist could cherry pick it, Joe.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah. All right. What else happened last week?
January 6th is legal.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I forgot about that.
Yeah, that happened.
And not just because Trump has immunity for it, but
people who broke down the windows and stuff like that. They are over 300 convictions or prosecutions are now in jeopardy because words mean what the Republicans want them to mean, not what they actually mean.
So the source
I shouldn't say Republican. I say Republican men because Amy Coney Barrett actually wrote a fire dissent. So.
Yeah, she seemed pretty mad about it, actually.
She sure did.
which was welcome. The basis of this, look, the basis of this, there is superficially a certain, maybe this is crazy. I believe it was Sarbanes-Oxley financial regulation as a means of preventing accounting fraud years ago. There was a law passed that made it a crime to basically submit fake financial statements to the government and stuff like that. Part of that was that you were disrupting an official proceeding or conspiring to, and that became a crime. Now, storming the Capitol to prevent the votes from being counted was probably not top of mind for the people who wrote Sarbanes-Oxley. That said, the text of it is what the text of it is. It says, like, if you're going to try to break up an official government and undermine an official government proceeding, that's a crime. The majority, who cares so much about textualism whenever they find it convenient, decided, well, that doesn't mean anything. And ACB stuck to a little bit to our earlier point about they need to have shame. She seems to have that muscle a little bit because she was like, but I thought we all agreed with text, and text is pretty clear here.
Yeah. I mean, she recognizes that, you know, this is written in a post-Enron world, but literally says, who could blame Congress for that failure of imagination? We never really imagined we'd be attempted coup USA, right? Like that really, I don't think was any, we didn't contemplate that, but that's not necessarily the failure of it. The majority admits it was an official proceeding, admits that it was disrupted. Why are we even here, friends?
So to you saying why are, I'm going to kind of phonetically mess with that. If we lived in a world where the only crimes you could charge were what was top of mind for the Congress who passed it, there are a lot of wire fraud convictions that need to get overturned.
Sure.
We basically use wire fraud to cover almost everything. That would all have to go. I mean, that's ridiculous.
Right. this is a horrible decision, but Amy Coney Barrett definitely got the right of it. And I do appreciate the sort of saltiness in her dissent to make the point as clear as possible. But, you know, again, it doesn't, shaming folks doesn't matter when there is no shame.
Yeah. So, with that said, is that, have we now covered everything?
I mean, I'm sure there's more, but
they made homelessness illegal.
Oh yeah, yeah. Homelessness is illegal. That was a thing. Forgot yes. about that bit. Yeah.
Yes. Also, one of the fun, you know, like consequences of the spat of rulings is that the president can sleep outside and be homeless now without being charged.
Oh yeah. So that case, what was interesting about that case is there was a rule that said, look, you can't. Well, there was an attempt to say, hey, people can't sleep outside in town. And the argument was, well, you can say that, but only if you have shelter for folks. Because if you don't have shelter for folks who need it, then you're basically criminalizing them. Yeah, it's cruel and unusual because you're criminalizing them for their conduct. I will note that in interpreting whether or not this counts as a cruel and unusual punishment, Neil Gorsuch, in writing the opinion, makes a point that says judges don't have any special skills in being able to interpret any of this. Literally, right as they're about to put out this Chevron decision about how they have the special skills to do all the specialness.
It's like no one shared their work up until
who
that moment.
Edits over there?
Wait, well, that now that you said that, that could be a point against your the judges know. Not a point against, but an interesting tension about the judges knowing when they issue the opinions.
They, I mean,
because I think they released Chevron and City Grant on the same day. Was that the case?
Yeah, but they read everything. It's not like they sign on to things without reading them. They get passed around. They know what's in everything, and they just don't care.
Mm-hmm.
It's the lack of shame issue that Catherine noted. They'll just do the opposite.
So there was a thing that happened when I realized that states were starting to make the turn and start legalizing weed. At first, I was like, yay, this is great, because this has mm-hmm. historically been used to, you know, disenfranchise and imprison slave black folks, what have you. But then I was like, capitalism is still a thing. There's still a market demand. I know that cities get sued if there aren't enough people in their prisons. What's mm-hmm. going to happen that's going to get criminalized to help fill up cells? Homelessness makes sense.
Yeah.
Like, it is on the rise. It is getting more expensive to be able to afford rent. And also this statute applies to people like sleeping in their cars. So you can't even homeless with a car. So like, I think this is a great decision, money speaking, for prisons.
Yeah.
That's really who you want the winners to be.
Yeah.
Yeah. Meanwhile, I will say also from the state of Oregon, Portland just started its new law, which is basically the flip side of the Grant's Pass decision. It now has a homelessness law where they criminalize homelessness if they don't take the shelter space, basically saying we will build all the shelter space and we're on the hook for that. And your homelessness only then becomes legal if you choose not to use that, which is kind of taking the logic that the people in Grant's Pass were trying to push and institutionalizing it. Not sure that's necessarily great either, but it is a sign that like some people took the lesson from it and are going to roll ahead despite the Supreme Court's wishes. Okay, with all that said, now I think we're done. Thanks everybody for listening. You should subscribe to the show, listen to new shows when they come out. That way you should give reviews of Bright Things, stars, all of that helps. You should be reading Above the Law, of course. You should also listen to other places that we are, like Catherine's on the Jabot podcast. I am a guest on Legal Tech Week Journalist Roundtable. You should be listening to the other offerings of the Legal Talk Network. You should be reading Above the Law and following us on social media. It's at ATL Blog. I'm at Joseph Patrice. She's at Catherine One. Chris is at Rights for Rent. I also am occasionally over at Blue Sky as Joe Patrice. And that, I think, now concludes everything.
Peace.
If you're a lawyer running a solo or small firm and you're looking for other lawyers to talk through issues you're currently facing in your practice, join the Unbillable Hours Community Roundtable, a free virtual event on the third Thursday of every month. Lawyers from all over the country come together and meet with me, lawyer and law firm management consultant Christopher T. Anderson,
to discuss best practices on topics such as marketing, client acquisition, hiring and firing, and time management. The conversation is free to join, but requires a simple reservation. The link to RSVP can be found on the Unbillable Hour page at LegalTalkNetwork.com. We'll see you there.